I don't know, Marge. Trying is the first step towards failure.
Welcome to the Chicago Endurance Sports Podcast. My name is Coach Michael, and I am the lead coach at the South Loop, and I am here with
Coach Christina.
And Coach Christina, doctor in the house.
Yes.
You've been with us before, but you want to introduce yourself again?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Christina Pecora, a licensed clinical psychologist here in Chicago. I work at a group practice with a bunch of phenomenal individuals. The practice is called Envision You. But the other work that I do is with Chicago Endurance Sports, where I've been the lead 5K, 10K coach. Shout out to all my short distance specialists who might be listening. And I've helped to coach marathon and half marathon programs and just generally been running with CES since 2007.
Great. So the last time we spoke on this podcast, we talked about goals. We had a great conversation about goals and talked about that. Mm-hmm. And we used the example of my race. Back then it was the spring. It was the beginning of the season as an example for using goals. And so coincidentally enough, today we're going to talk about that race a little bit.
Great.
What's coming up. So at the time we set up this race, I was scheduled to do a race called the Yeti 100. And it was, you know, the season's been uncertain with race cancellations, but I made a decision at the beginning of the season to just do the training, to see what happens. It's a smaller race. We didn't know what was going to happen over time. And so I did all the training involved, which for a 100-mile race tends to be a bit of an effort. And but it also gave me something to focus on and a target. So anyways, as the race got near, it did not get canceled, but we started to have a bit of concern about traveling and going to an event like this, you know, with COVID and everything going on. So literally, I think it was 2 days before the race, we decided not to go. It was going to be a 10-hour drive to Virginia, and we decided not to go. And it was really hard. And I remember sending the text to the race director to let him know we're not coming. And it took me a long time just to hit that button to say, no, we're not coming.
Oh, I bet.
But anyways, basically, I was going to go with a friend who I do a lot of my crazy races with, and we put in the work. So we came with the idea, maybe we could just do the race here.
Nice.
And so at the last minute, like I said, that for that weekend, because we canceled like 2 days in advance, we started working on trying to figure out a course and all the logistics to do it on the same day, basically, which was that Friday. And it was a kind of a big rush thing. But we laid it out. We thought we had a good plan. It was 100 miles. So there's a lot of plan involved because we want to be, you know, we're going to be places in the middle of the night. We want to be someplace safe in the city. So anyways, it did not go very well from the start. It was a warm day out. I felt kind of nauseous early and kind of kept pushing through it. In about mile 35, we just decided that it wasn't happening and we're going to, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to happen. So we kind of turned in and hopefully thought about possibly trying it again sometimes. As our wounds healed a bit, we picked another date. It was about a month later. It was a week before Winter Warriors. That was another deadline we had to worry about. And we were going to schedule to go on a Friday again. And we had a little more time, though, to plan and think it through, which helped us, I think. And the fact that we ran part of the course already kind of helped us. That Friday, the weather was awful. It rained, it poured, it storms. So the night before, we decided, let's try it on Saturday instead. One of the advantages of not doing a formal race is, you know, going with the weather. The weather didn't look great on Saturday, but it would have been miserable on Friday. Okay. So actually, Saturday turned out to be a really nice day, and we're having a really good run. We're hitting kind of all our estimated times as possible. Mm-hmm. We had someone traveling around as a aid station about every 10 miles. So we had to plan everything out in advance to meet us. But we were doing really well on that. And as it got struggled. And in the early morning, the next morning, we're going, obviously very exhausted, but it got started to sleet. It got very cold.
Oh my goodness.
Windy, and we were struggling. And we decided at about mile 72, you know, you feel like you're almost there, but we decided that was it. And we called it quits. At the time, it was like, you know, you're exhausted, you're tired, and it just wasn't there. My issues, you know, my knees as well, that's, you know, I had some pain, but mm-hmm. it was enough. I felt I could go on if I had to, but I just wasn't feeling it. Mm-hmm. So after that happened, the next day, when you start thinking about it, I started to feel a little bit empty. Like I set out to do something and I didn't quite get there. I spent a lot of work this summer training for it, looking forward to it, and then coming up empty on it. And I struggled with that because I'm like, I knew logically 72 miles is nothing to shake a stick at, you know?
Right, that's a very far distance.
But I find myself focusing more on the disappointment and kind of reanalyzing everything I did. And that brought me to the point where I started thinking about success and failure and thinking to myself, what is success and what is failure? And that's the point. And I thought, hey, I should talk to Christina because she might have some thoughts on this, because I know in a lot of ways, even though my example is sort of extreme from dealing with a lot of athletes, is a lot of people deal with this, that they work, maybe they're looking to qualify for Boston or hit a time goal on a race. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of times people tell me that, you know, how'd you join a race? And they define it as, it wasn't a PR. Mm-hmm. It's kind of implying it wasn't a success for them. Okay. So I became real curious on the definitions of success and failure and how we do that and maybe how we can work to that in our advantage. And that's sort of where, like I said, I decided, hey, I should talk about this with Christina. And it, as I spoke to her before this, the recording is, it's a little difficult for me to talk about failure as well. You know, and bring that out publicly, you know, because it's something we don't talk about.
Yeah. So without making this Michael's therapy session, I do want to say thank you for sharing this story with me, but also with CES in general and anybody else who might be listening. Because the story is so common, I feel like. Now, the distance is not that common. The distance really is quite something with more and more people running half marathons and even marathons. These 100 milers, these very long distance endurance races are still quite exceptional. But the story and the feeling itself in what you're talking about, I feel, has been so common, and perhaps more common in 2020, this crazy kind of year that we've all been dealing with. So I'm really happy to be here and to be talking about this stuff, and to be using your example as such a great illustration of how to overcome this constant debate about success and failure that that athletes have about their performances so often. So I'm so glad that we're doing this today. And really what we're talking about is this kind of success-failure dichotomy about definitions. So it's all about the stories that we tell ourselves. It's all about how we craft the narrative of disappointing times. And I've been talking with a lot of clients, a lot of athletes, a lot of friends, a lot of family members about how we are seeing and how we are dealing with disappointment these days. Because really what you're talking about is a disappointment. Do I have that right? Are you disappointed, or have you kind of come out of this a little bit differently? How would you define kind of what we're talking about here?
So is there a difference between disappointment and failure?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad you asked that question. It's such a great question. We tend to think about performance as two ends of a spectrum. One is success and one is failure. And we forget that there are so many different facets to success and to failure, but especially and particularly failure. We have so much to learn about failure. There is so much opportunity from failure. I tell people all the time, you never learn anything by doing it, whatever it is, right the first time. You learn from failure. And to perform, we actually have to welcome failure into our lives so that we learn, oh, right, this is this is a sticking point for me. This mile in a marathon is always challenging for me. This is where I failed last time. So I know how to tackle it. Failure equals opportunity, really. It's sometimes hard to see it that way because of disappointment. So disappointment is just the emotion that we assign to failure a lot of times. And really, if we look at failure as an opportunity, it can become less disappointing because we don't have to necessarily connect them together.
Okay.
Did that answer your question? What questions do you have after that?
I think I'm trying to better understand disappointment. So disappointment more is the emotional feeling of it, and failure is kind of not living up to the definition of what accomplishing something is. That's
a great way to put it. That's fantastic. If we think of failure as kind of a noun, failure is not an emotion.
Yeah,
it's not neither good nor bad. It is just the absence of success. It is not our definition of success, maybe. Whereas the disappointment is the emotion that we connect to failure most times. Whereas really, like, nobody's going to be happy that they failed. Nobody's going to be happy that, you know, you set out to run 100 miles and you, quote unquote, only made it to 72. And I'm not saying you have to be happy about failure, but there is opportunity in failure. And you can be disappointed, but let's allow that disappointment to only live there with that failure for a short amount of time. We can mourn the fact that we did not achieve our success, but then we can redefine it, look at the failure, look at all the facets of that failure, and see where we can actually turn this failure into an opportunity for future success.
Okay. Yeah. I want to explore the idea of kind of moving past the failure, but I'd like to kind of cover some other things first and then we kind of work on solutions a little bit later on.
Absolutely.
So kind of to speak to that, is there a way to separate disappointment from failure, or is it just a matter of understanding that there is a difference?
I think it starts with the understanding that there is a difference, that the two things don't need to be coupled, but they are frequently coupled. You have the choice to uncouple them. And I think that that is going to be a groundbreaking realization for a lot of people. At least it is when I'm working with clients in therapy. The fact that you have a choice to feel how you want to feel about failure, that's an eye-opener. That is a game changer. And so if you find yourself feeling disappointed with an unmet goal, okay, there's emotions are indicators of room to grow. Emotions are indicators for change, especially negative emotions. And quite honestly, there are a ton of negative emotions that present us with opportunities: sadness, disappointment, fear. All of these things can trigger us to make some changes. And so when you feel disappointed, you can say, like, okay, I'm not happy with this outcome. What can I do about it? You don't necessarily have to swim in that disappointment or accept that that is there forever. Every single time you tell this story about your 100-mile race, you can tell it differently. Sometimes you will focus on the disappointment. Other times you'll focus on the craziness of the logistics. Sometimes you'll focus on the weather. Sometimes you'll focus on the fact that, oh my goodness, you ran 72 miles in a course that you made up in the city of Chicago and surrounds. And holy cats, like, that's a real achievement.
Yeah. And I find myself still going in and out of that. It's not quite as bitter as it was, but there's still a little bit of a sting. But as you mentioned, I still kind of find myself questioning, what if I would have pushed just a little bit harder or given myself a little more leeway and kept going? Would that have made a difference? And then logically, I'm telling myself, why am I worried about that? Why aren't I just ecstatic and celebrating the fact that I traveled the distance I did on my own 2 feet, you know, by myself under the circumstances? But even still, it continues to be a struggle. Maybe it's a good time to talk about this, but I think it's a big thing about athletes, and we talk about failure, is there's a lot of Monday morning quarterback where during a run, during some sort of event, whether it's a 5K or a 1 mile, whatever, we're pushing as hard as we can. Sometimes we're hurting and we have to slow down because we're just struggling and we're not feeling good. But then after we're done with the race, later on, we don't remember that as much. And we're like, could have done this. Why didn't I do this? But in the moment, you're somewhere else. And I think that's very common for a lot of runners. I know a lot, I hear a lot of kind of justification after race. And so I wanted to kind of speak to this, kind of reviewing what we did, but I also want to also, I guess you could include or maybe separate this, the idea of excuses versus justification.
Absolutely. I want to start with your first point, which was Monday morning quarterbacking and our tendency, as you said, to look back on our performance and pick out what we could have done better or all of the what ifs. What if I had taken my gel at mile 15? Or what if we had just started a couple hours earlier to beat the heat of the day kind of stuff? This kind of review, the performance review, is done by absolutely every single athlete. And it's part of our moving from failure to opportunity. But a lot of times, again, people connect those negative emotions of disappointment, sadness, unhappiness to these things when really it's an opportunity, again, for us to learn. When we look back, it's really built into us evolutionarily, looking at what we did wrong. So it goes all the way back to when we were really fighting it out in the jungles and the deserts, and we're looking for, how do I survive? What did I do wrong in that moment? How could I make this better? How could I be more successful on this hunt? How can I weave this basket better? Where can I forage for berries better? How do I perform better equals survival, or at least it did hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. So we're hardwired to look back on things that we're doing and try to improve upon them. But what that means in our modern world, when we don't have to do that, is that we're over-focused on the negative. We're over-focused on the what-ifs and what could we have done better without acknowledging, oh my goodness, I ate really well today. I foraged for those berries and I am awesome. Without acknowledging that I ran 72 miles on a course that I planned without a crowd around me and with no other help except for like one or two people, the person I was running with and our mobile aid station. So we all do this Monday morning quarterbacking for a reason, but we have to be able to acknowledge that, yes, there's a reason for this. However, I can't let it take away from what I actually did achieve. I have to be grateful for what mile marker I made it to. I have to be grateful for all of the weeks of training, the months of training that went into this performance. And I can acknowledge my sadness and my disappointment without it taking away from the performance that I did give. And again, using that sadness or disappointment as the trigger for making some change. So when I work with clients, what I'm trying to get them to do is take their negative focus and their what ifs and make them very future oriented. They're always triggers for what I need to think about in the future. They are not opportunities to dwell on the past. And simply making the choice to move that disappointment from the past into the future makes those thoughts much more productive. And for performance athletes, that's what we want to focus on. We want to focus on future performance. We want to focus on getting better. If we spend too much time focusing on the what ifs and the disappointment and the sadness of the past, we get stuck there. And that can affect our future performance because we're not focused on the next marathon, the next 10K, the next training run. We're focused on what we did back there. And as we all know, if we're overly focused on the negative, we're going to perform negatively. We're going to find that disappointment and that sadness to really be sad about in the now.
So if you're looking for something bad to happen, you're going to find it? Is that what you're kind of...
There certainly is something to be said about the self-fulfilling prophecy in performance, in endurance sports, in any kind of, even in presentations and public speaking. If I overly focus on stumbling on my words here, I'm going to stumble on my words because I've set myself up. My brain is thinking about it. I'm kind of visualizing it in my head. I'm not correcting it in my head. I'm focusing on the negative, and my brain is going to set me up to perform with stumbled words. If I envision myself stumbling over my words here, and then I envision myself correcting it, my brain is set up for it. It is visualizing success. And I'm going to sound much more articulate than I would if I just focused on don't stumble on my words. Don't stumble on my words.
Yeah, I tell a story a lot to my athletes because, you know, especially marathon training, there's the mystery of everyone talks about the wall at 20 miles. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I tell people, if you look for the wall, you're going to hit it.
You'll find
it. An example I gave was one of my races I was in, I think I was at mile 23, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I didn't hit the wall. And all of a sudden the wheels came off, you know, because I brought it to my conscience that it's supposed to be a tough spot mm-hmm. and I should be struggling through it. And magically I did. Mm-hmm. So I tell people now that, you know, if you look for it, you're going to find it. So mm-hmm. don't look for it.
Absolutely.
And it's basically what you kind of just said, right?
Mm-hmm. There was an old Frasier episode, so way back in the day, the OG Frasier, where he was in a bike race. He entered a bike race, but he was terrible at biking because he would focus on a pole or a stop sign and he would run into it. And he had a friend who was helping him out and said, like, just don't focus on the pole. And all of a sudden he was riding a bike fine. At the start line, the friend said, don't hit a pole. And instantly he smashes into a pole or a fire hydrant or whatever it is. It is absolutely perfectly encapsulated and illustrated in that episode. It's great.
Interesting. So I've kind of brought this up before, and I'm a little confused about this, and I don't know whether this is valid or not, is the idea of excuses versus justifications. Mm-hmm. Obviously, certain situations, if you're at a race and the weather's horrendous, you know, it's really blustery or whatever, that's probably, I guess, be a justification. Mm-hmm. But then there's, you know, obviously you can make, there's the factor of excuses as well. And how does that play in? And there's on either side, is there any usability to that? Or is it just kind of taking all these things, these factors, and just accepting them and putting that into kind of the big picture of, based on these conditions, this is how I perform today.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The difference between excuse and justification is really semantics, right? It's a very small difference. Some things can have a really positive or a negative mental influence. And regardless of what you call them, acknowledging that there were reasons that maybe you didn't hit your goal, that's actually a good thing. That is really good behavior. And when you're feeling disappointed about not hitting 100 miles, you're looking for, like, okay, what happened? What actually happened in my environment that, pardon me, caused me to miss my goal? What happened internally, so emotionally or even like biologically, that didn't help me make my goal? What happened socially, or kind of like with other people, that didn't help me meet my goal? And as you pick through all of those things, you again look for opportunities to change the future or to learn for your next race, or to just say, like, okay, cool, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to, you know, rely on, I'm not going to tell my bike support to meet me at 15 miles when I have learned that I actually need them at 13 miles. But yeah, the difference between an excuse and a justification is really just semantics. What you want to be looking for are the reasons that you didn't perform so well so that you can improve upon those things in the future. What you want to get away from is just making excuses with other people, or, you know, coming up with false reasons that you didn't do so well. Because what you're probably doing is falling into that trap of self-comparison or self-other comparison, and you're trying to live up to standards that other people have for themselves or for you. And that's another kind of mental trap that people fall into that helps them think negatively about their performance.
Okay, which is perfect because another thing on my list, what I'm looking here right here is the temptation to define success or failure by comparing yourself to others. Mm-hmm. And you kind of address that a little bit. I'm wondering if it's possible to use that to your advantage, if there's anything advantageous about that, or is it just not a good idea and it's something we should try not to do at all?
You know, it depends. It's really hard for somebody to use self-other comparisons and be successful unless you have really trained in that. So if anybody watched the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, you saw Michael Jordan frequently creating these scenarios in which somebody talked shit about him or somebody was putting out in the press that he wasn't going to do well, or even going so far as, you know, people were saying he had the flu or people were saying that he wasn't going to perform well. He set up those situations and kind of manipulated them in his mind to perform. And they actually motivated him to perform in games or series very well. That is a particular mental skill that may be idiosyncratic to Michael Jordan. I have not seen that work with a ton of people. So if you want to train yourself to compare yourself to others or to what people are saying about you and to blow by their expectations, that's something that I would highly suggest you work with somebody. Or if you started really early, then go do that. It's really hard for mere mortals to use self-other comparisons as motivators because, for several reasons, but the number one is that those standards are not your own standards and other people can change them on a dime. Other people change their standards, their expectations of you, and you don't get a say in it. You're not in control of that. So it's actually much better to set your own standards and be in control of those and not try to live to somebody else's performance and not try to drive your performance off of somebody else's. You just don't have enough control. And when we're talking about goals and expectations, we want to have a lot of control over those.
It's your allusion to Michael Jordan. I'm thinking maybe if you're a competitive athlete, if you're a professional competitive athlete, you kind of in a way have to, you're matching up against other people, but it's a smaller group and you probably should have a lot more in common than everyone gathers like at the Chicago Half Marathon, which is a myriad of people from, mm-hmm. you know, experienced to newbies, et cetera. So
for sure. You never know what the person at the start line, the person next to you, you never know what they had for breakfast. You never know what kind of weather conditions they perform over. So you never want to choose somebody who you don't know to compare yourself to, but even your best friend, like you just have no idea and no control over their personal environment. And to your point, Michael, yes, if you are an exceptional, like 0.01% athlete, right? I think what made Michael Jordan so successful is that he really only had himself to compete with. Like he was in another category, and I know that this is probably open for debate and we won't get into it, but he's in a category mostly by himself. And so to motivate himself, he had to kind of create things to go after. We mere mortals and most people who, you know, strive for healthy performance within CES. Sure, we're looking to beat our own time, and that is really what we should focus on.
Okay, great. So the next thing I kind of have on my agenda is this tendency, and this kind of obviously flows and everything else, is kind of overlook or discredit our successes.
Yes.
Like I said before, like saying things like, well, it wasn't a PR, or I only did a 5K. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. In fact, during training today, I was running with some people and we ran 6 miles and they didn't really come to grips with the fact that running 6 miles is a pretty astounding thing for an average person to be doing.
Yeah, so for sure.
Is there a science thing why we do that, or is there a way to, and once again, I think maybe this is, and we'll come to this later on, we talk about solutions, about defining how we define success and failure. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering about that.
I think we have to go back to that success and failure, the two opposite ends of the spectrum. And I talked a lot about the many facets of failure and how it's such an opportunity. There are so many facets of success. And a lot of times people forget to define those things. I know in marathon season, we at CES, we coaches talk a lot about having A, B, and C goals. And to taking the time to expand that definition of success so that there are many versions of success on race day, or even success throughout training. Often people focus on, and when they come and they say to you, well, yes, I finished, but it wasn't a PR. That's a healthy indication of what success was for them. A PR was success. And perhaps that was their only definition. Maybe they're actually communicating to you the A, B, and C goals and just saying it in a different way. Like, well, I didn't meet my A goal, but I did meet my C goal, which was to finish. It's kind of, again, the emotions that you attach to how you're thinking about your race. And that it might also play into some self-comparisons, right? Like, well, I didn't run a 9-minute mile, but I did finish and I feel pretty good about it, but I don't know if I can feel good about that because so many people around me are so much faster, right? And so you can see in just how people talk about their races illustrates all of these mental traps that they're falling into. And it does take a very confident runner to come up and say, yeah, I finished that marathon in 4:24, you know, and just kind of talk about how they did without giving caveats. And what I would encourage people to do is just figure out a way to focus on the different facets of success, those facets that you met in that race, and try to talk about that race from those goals instead of saying what you didn't do. That's a challenge for pretty much anybody who is looking to perform. Most of the time, I think people don't think terribly negatively of themselves, but they don't know how to communicate that they did a really good job without needing an objective definition of success. And that's too bad. That's us not really giving us enough credit for the good stuff that we just did.
As you were talking about that, I started thinking about how we personally define success and failure stems from our motivations.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Mm-hmm. What drives us to, part of this conversation we're having today about, oh, I run 6 miles is, how can anyone run a marathon? Why would anyone do that? So obviously there's a myriad of things, but I would tend to think that how we view the performance at the end of the day would be based on what motivated us to do that in the first place, right?
Let's hope so. I think that people tend to talk a little bit more short term than that, which is why in marathon training, we try to focus people on why are you running these miles? Assign a reason to run each mile. So like if you're running for a charity, think about the animals at PAWS when you're running. Like, think about, you know, go visit the shelter and pick out 16 animals and run a mile for each of those animals. We try to get people to think about their original motivation for signing up for a marathon. Oh, I'm going to run for charity. I'm going to make this bigger reason for running. And really, when we think about performance, we really just think like, how did I do on that day? Rarely do people think about the 20, 25 weeks they just spent training and how hard they work to even get to the start line. So it's a difficult thing to get people to connect the bigger picture to performance. And you have to work really hard on it. You have to say to yourself, like, why do I even put myself through this? This is a crazy hobby to have. Most of us are never going to win any money from it. Sometimes we don't even finish and we train for, you know, 10, 12, 20, 25 weeks. You trained for how long for this 100 miler?
I think I started in March for September, which eventually did October. So yeah, so that's a big chunk of time.
That's a huge chunk of time that you are dedicating to running 100 miles. And I don't think you probably thought about all of that effort on that day, right? You were probably solely focused on that 100 miles.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's a tricky thing. If we can do the mental gymnastics of reminding ourselves why we are doing this, like I run marathons because running is the only time when I think about like one thing at a time. I am solely focused on my feet hitting that pavement or how my body feels when I run. Every other time in my day and in my life, I'm probably thinking about at least two other things. And so I'll put myself through 22 weeks of training and one big long race just to have that mental clarity. But I'm not thinking about that on race day. I'm thinking about my time. So yeah, we have to put work at it in order to think about, oof, what is my foundation for running this kind of stuff? And I would encourage people to do that because obviously it helps to define success a bit more broadly than just a PR.
Okay. So that sort of kind of moves us into how do we start making these adjustments where we're weighting things in a way where if necessarily we don't hit our goals or fail to succeed, it's either the wound isn't as deep or we view it in a more positive light and less on the negative side of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we started with one option. So where I want everyone to start is by decoupling disappointment with failure and remembering like you have a choice of how you want to feel about failure. Because no matter what, we are all going to go out and fail. That failure might be not hitting the PR. It might be not finishing the race. It might be putting in a lot of time and effort and missing your flight or having the race get canceled or having all of the races in 2020 get canceled practically. It might be a ton of things that we can't determine ourselves or that we can't control. And so we're all going to fail and acknowledging that failure is disappointing, but that's not the only thing we can think about it. Start there and then determine with each performance, whether that's each long run, whether that's each, you know, workout, whether that's each race, determine what else you're going to feel about this race if you fail and make failure an integral part of your running plan. Just your running hobby, your running career, make failure a part of it. So that's number one. Number two, we've already talked about too, is what are all of the ways that you're going to define success? So thinking about the many facets of success, your ABC goals for training as well as race day, all of those things, challenge yourself to say, if I do this, I'm going to be successful. And if I do this, I'm going to be successful, and make those other than time goals as well. Kind of getting back to our first discussion, setting goals that you are 100% in control of and that don't have anything to do with other people's performance or other people's expectations, but just saying like, okay, this is what I want to do with this race. And this is how I'm going to go about doing this, but making sure that that is 100% in your control. You know that you've got the time to put in to train. You know that if you're focusing on nutrition, you've got the time to like, eat what you want to eat and hydrate the way you want to hydrate. And all of those things are in your control. You're not going to just go off and do what other people are doing and seeing if you can make your goals that way. And then, you know, I think another tool is gratitude. It's a perfect season to practice gratitude. So I'm going to encourage everyone throughout the month of November to be grateful for the things that you have and the things that you have achieved this year, even if none of those include a medal or crossing a finish line, like an official finish line. Whenever we meet disappointment, the antidote is gratitude. Whether that's about a race PR or the distance traveled, or about, you know, goals that you had for other things than running during 2020, or even, you know, like if lockdown is looming again for us here in Chicago or even throughout the United States, what can we do? What can we be thankful for in a time that is difficult for us? And sometimes that's going to be as basic as I have a good pair of running shoes or I have legs that allow me to run. Sometimes we got to get back to those kinds of basics. And other times it's going to be like, you know what? Today was a beautiful day to go running. And I'm so thankful for these temperatures in November for the sunshine. Or I'm thankful that CES decided to meet in person. So I had that extra thing of motivation this weekend. I might not have it next weekend, but I had it this weekend. And you can kind of see how gratitude could be the antidote to disappointment, because disappointment can't live for very long if you're looking at things that you actually appreciate or that you know that you did well or that you can acknowledge you're thankful for. So if you can keep those things in mind, you're good. Go ahead. Yeah,
when I was trying to come to grips with my disappointment, I kind of thought about some things. And I thought about, you know, I did a lot of training. Like I said, I'd probably trained since March, but mm-hmm. I did it injury free. I got through the training successfully, which I think, you know, is something that has to be acknowledged.
That's 7 months of injury free training for sure. Right.
So, and I did the training pretty much. I followed it pretty well as far as I did the work. And the other thing that I thought about was, this is really, I think the first time I did this, that much work by myself, mm-hmm. because I didn't care to run with other people and do that. It was kind of all had to be self-motivated. And I was out there a lot, you know, on my own, a lot of time in my own head. In retrospect, obviously it took a lot of work on my side to actually, you know, pick myself and get through that. So I've kind of went through that process myself to try and kind of cope with or understand what I was dealing with.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that you're talking about here, Michael, is really crafting a narrative, right? It is, what is the story I'm going to tell myself about my experience? Am I going to focus on the things that I did achieve? Or am I going to focus on the fact that I didn't hit my 100 miles? Am I going to look deeper at the story? Or am I going to stay very surface about time and distance? And we were talking before we started recording about vulnerability and the stories that we tell ourselves. And if anybody out there already knows about Brené Brown, then you know the power of her. She's a doctoral, like a PhD social worker, and she is the preeminent researcher on vulnerability and how powerful that emotion can be in helping us to feel successful, helping us to have successful relationships, successful performances, and vulnerability explicitly tied to failure, since that's when we tend to feel the most vulnerable, when we're on the verge of failing, or when we're fearing failure, or when we have experienced something like that. And one of her primary prescriptions, basically, is to be cognizant of the stories that we tell ourselves and the stories that we tell each other, and that crafting our narrative is a very powerful tool in learning how to make success out of failure.
So I think a lot of times, and we've talked about this, especially when we get to race day, is we talked about the concept of risk and reward, mm-hmm. where if you want to achieve something greater, it's going to come with a larger price. You know, the harder it is, the bigger the chance of failure. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to say about that? Or I have things to say about it, but if you have some things.
Sure. Well, I think that you have illustrated the ratio between risk and reward beautifully by talking about your training for 7 months And then the reward at the end wasn't 100 miles. But if you expand your definition of success and you look at all the things that you did achieve logistically, as well as physically and mentally, it sounds like you took a lot of risks right down to the to race day and making that work for yourself. And you got a reward, and you're struggling maybe a little bit to be happy about that reward.
And when I thought about this too, when I was thinking about risk and reward, I was thinking, when you were talking about setting goals, it's maybe not a bad idea to set some high risk, but pair that with some things are you're more likely to achieve. Mm-hmm. So you're not, it's not all or nothing. And like you said, it could be a matter of defining, okay, completing the full distance mm-hmm. is the ultimate reward, but all these steps along the way, like I said, training, getting through training and putting in the effort are also victories along the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. When we talk about A, B, and C goals for a race, right? My C goal is to finish always, like regardless of what's going on, it's to finish. It would have to be a major challenge, like a major risk for me to not set that as my C goal, because I want to make sure that my C goal is something that I know that I can achieve. And at this point, I've been running enough 5Ks, 10Ks, halves, and fulls. I know I can achieve that distance, and something's going to have to go very, very wrong for me not to achieve that. My A and B goals might change per race, but my C is always, that feels like a safety goal. That's not going to be everybody's safety goal, of course, but for me, it feels like that's my safety. I think that that's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I think if you only set lofty goals, mm-hmm. then you're going to end up more in a situation where you can't find satisfaction out of the results at all. Mm-hmm. So you need, by setting multiple levels, you'll at least walk away with some satisfaction. It may not be the ultimate, just like if you're an Olympian, you might not take the gold medal, but if you're the bronze, or you even made it into the Olympics, mm-hmm. you know, these are different measurements.
Yeah. And again, that's something that you have to work really hard for. Right? There are so many studies about the psychology of the Olympics and how people who win the silver medal are less happy than people who win the bronze. People who just missed out on gold are sadder or more disappointed than people who almost missed the podium. And so what we're talking about here is the reframe. How do you see just missing gold as a reward? You see it in, again, the story that you tell yourself by saying, I achieved the silver medal. I did my best on this day and I earned a silver, not I just missed a gold. One is a reward and one is a failure or a disappointment, I should say.
Okay. And once you get to this point and you say you don't reach your A goal or even your B goal. Do you have any tips on motivating yourself and getting yourself back to kind of doing that again in a positive way and not in a, you know, harmful or you know, negative way?
For sure. Like, yeah. It goes back to finding the opportunity to defining failure as not just the lack of success, but a real opportunity. And really, this is the message that I've been giving everybody about this year, this very challenging, hard year with a lot of disappointments in it. What is the opportunity here? What is the opportunity of not achieving my goal? That can be, I sign up for another race and I try it again next year. And the opportunity is that I learn from what I didn't do here in this race, and I try again in the future. Or the opportunity is I learned that I really don't like training and running for 100-mile races, and I am done. I'm going to stick to 50s and fewer. That's a fine lesson to have learned. And we talked about this in our last podcast too. What is the opportunity in a year where you're spending a lot of time at home?
and you're running solo or you're not running any races, sometimes that opportunity is you're being nice to your body and you're giving it the break that it needs because you've been training for so many years in a row. Sometimes that's the opportunity to strength train more or to, you know, get on a bike or to, you know, learn like you and like I have been doing in 2020, learn how to achieve these things all by ourselves without the benefit of the group or without the benefit of a teammate. There are tons of opportunities out there, but we have to open ourselves up to the question of what's the opportunity, not just, ugh, I'm disappointed.
Right. I've noticed there's a harsh line between people who are like, I really enjoying and are motivated by these virtual races and events, mm-hmm. and other people who don't see any point in them and it does nothing for them and it can't motivate them to do anything more. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting to see, you know, and it's a balance too, where there's novice runners who are highly motivated by the virtual run and experienced runners, mm-hmm. and there's novice and experienced runners who can't find any purpose in doing them. So success and failure, obviously, you know, this comes when you can't meet as a group is when there's a competition, right? When you're in a race and there's other people around you, you're mm-hmm. passing other people mm-hmm. or you're falling behind other people or you place your age group. We're in a point where there's really no competition. Because even if you're in a virtual race, for the most part, you're really not competing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But unless yourself, you're competing with yourself.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And the reframe for this and the finding the opportunity for this is really, I encourage everybody to go out and experiment with what does motivate them. Try all of these different things. If you don't think that virtual races will inspire you because there's no crowd and there's no, you know, jostling at the start line and there's no thousands of people, that's okay. But prove yourself right or wrong. Try a virtual race, try a virtual event. And if it doesn't motivate you, great. Then you've proved yourself right. Try something else. You know, like invite a buddy or a group of people to go on training together virtually, quote unquote. But experiment with a whole bunch of things, because really the opportunity about 2020 and not having races is to figure out how to motivate yourself when there isn't that motivator of a race and tons of people. And self-exploration is a difficult thing. It's not something that everybody welcomes, but it's always a good thing to do.
Right. Some people do running streaks where they want to run, mm-hmm. you know, a mile every day for a period of time, or even three times a week. If I'm going to exercise three times a week, mm-hmm. and set your own personal goals and guidelines for that. So it doesn't have to be distance-based. It doesn't have to be a formal competition. It could be a made-up competition mm-hmm. as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you motivate yourself?
Yeah. Well, and when we come out of this, if you've mastered motivating yourself, when it comes time to run in competition or run with a group, mm-hmm. you should probably become a lot sharper, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We say so much about endurance athletes that the 90% of what we do is between the ears. It's not the outdoors. It's not the actual physical activity. It is the mental game. And 2020 is a great year to work on your mental game.
Great.
And possibly into 2021, not to cast too dark of a shadow on it.
Okay. Do you have any other final thoughts or any other topics we should be covering here?
I'm just thrilled that we got to do a mix of endurance running and kind of clinical psychology therapy talk in here, because these skills are so valuable for everyone, and they can be translated from endurance running into the other parts of your life as well. Dealing with disappointment, using gratitude, visualizing and setting yourself up for success. All of those things are great tools to have. And thank you so much for offering a venue to get this message out.
Great. Well, I appreciate your input and your expertise as well, because I find it pretty interesting. I was telling you before we started recording that after I started thinking about that and set this up, all of a sudden, a bunch of articles and podcasts on similar topics kind of presented themselves. And as I expressed you too, it's, you know, it's kind of humbling and talk about failure, but you start hearing, and Michael Jordan, I think, is a perfect example where they always say, you know, he's probably missed more shots than he's made, but you don't hear about that part of it. Everyone talks about their success. It's a little harder to share that when you don't have that success, but everyone does it.
Absolutely. Everybody fails.
Doesn't win. No one wins 100% of the time.
No, so. For sure not.
Except
not
even Christina.
No. The next podcast we do, we can talk about how I'm an awesome teacher, but even I trip up in the mental game.
Well, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And I want to thank all the listeners for taking time to listen to us. We always learn so much when Coach Christina comes and shares her expertise. So we appreciate that. If you have not listened to our episode that we recorded together about goal setting, I highly recommend that. This has been the Chicago Endurance Sports Podcast. And remember, the bigger the smile, the faster the mile.